This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. This year, something about Washington politics and attempts by localities to reach past the arguments, incivility, and the gridlock seemed to call for a deeper historical understanding of how we arrived at this time and place by opening our eyes to what we may have complacently looked past.
In an interview this winter, Corey Robin, journalist and professor at Brooklyn College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, gave us the term historovox, which refers to what we lose when we take a short view of history or try to force current events into a pseudo-historical frame. Robin explained with a quote from Orwell.
To see what is in front of one's nose needs a constant struggle. He said, one thing that helps toward it, that is, seeing in front of your nose, is to keep a diary, or at any rate, to keep some kind of record of one's opinions about important events. Otherwise, when some particularly absurd belief is exploded by events, one may simply forget that one ever held it. We all have a picture of the world, and in the age of the historovox, that picture of the world is provided to us by this nexus of journalists and academics. But that picture seems to change with a kind of an alarming rapidity. And we forget that not so long ago, we had a very different understanding of these things. Let's take the last couple of years. There were all kinds of historical arguments that were advanced about Trump as a reprise of Mussolini and his fascism.
I think that Donald Trump's rhetoric of law and order is very Hitler-like.
The problem, as I saw it, was not so much that people were cherry-picking from the past. It was the total indifference and lack of curiosity about what was happening, as Orwell said, right in front of your nose. For the first 2 years, when the Republicans completely controlled Congress, Trump sent up two budgets. He asked for things like cut off all funding for Planned Parenthood, $25 billion for the wall, billions of dollars more for hundreds of new enforcement officers in ICE. Those budgets were repeatedly rejected by a Republican-controlled Congress. The simplest definition of authoritarian is somebody who substitutes for the rule of law his will. And yet, Trump was singularly incapable of acting upon his will. So the problem here is not cherry-picking from the past. The problem is a composite picture from the past that's overlaid on the present that is indifferent to some pretty strong facts.
If this is a question of framing, how should we frame the current moment?
A couple of elements. Number one, rather than representing a break with the right, Trump represents an intensification of longstanding tendencies on the right, particularly with respect to questions about race. Number two, that intensification on the right goes hand in hand with what I think is a steady weakening of the conservative movement. In other words, rather than seeing Trump and conservatism as embodying a new ascendancy, I think that a proper historical reckoning would see everything about the Trump regime as a sign of growing weakness. I sometimes use an analogy from the past. If you were in Britain in the second half of the 1970s, on the left, there were a group of Trotskyists, and they became increasingly militant. If you were to focus on them, you would think the story of the second half of Britain in the 1970s is the rise of the militant tendency. But of course, we know the real story was the rise of Thatcherism. A group can become more radicalized, more extreme, precisely in concert with its marginalization. And all the signs are that compared to somebody like Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, or George W. Bush, Trump is presiding over a very weak Republican presidency. not because the presidency is weak, but I would argue be because the conservative movement and the Republican Party have gotten weaker. And that has gone hand in hand with a kind of intensification of certain extreme tendencies on the Republican Party.
What you seem to be describing is a supernova burning brightly with tremendous amount of destructive energy because it's a dying star.
I think that's perfectly put.
So this edition of the show has been all about the lens through which we as a nation have viewed our place in time. Now let's end with some thoughts about the lens on the media applies to them. As you listen to these clips over the past hour, you may have observed in a show called On the Media, an odd paucity of reporting and criticism about news media. If you're a longtime listener, you might also have noted a gradual, and of late not so gradual, shift away from the news of the news. Once upon a time, we devoted most of our efforts to the failures, foibles, conflicts, challenges, and unseen machinery of the, plural, media. In our first Brook and Bob OTM ever, 19 years ago next month, we had 10 segments, including a profile of a despondent New York Post overnight shift police reporter, a skeptical look at the White House press corps, an obit for George magazine, and a parable of media concentration focused on the shutdown of, obviously, Modern Ferret magazine.
Since 1995, they have combined puckish wit and service journalism to explore everything from ferret heart disease to ferret products. Eric, the publisher, reads from the tag attached to one of them, a furry mechanical ferret.
I'm a little poop, pal. I'll tell you what I mean. Squeeze my little tummy, you'll get a jelly bean.
They poop jelly beans. Some people find it offensive. Yes.
Not that we've ever been solely focused on news organizations. Also in our portfolio was any First Amendment issue, the unraveling media economy, and the sometimes twisted relationship between journalists and officialdom. And in the midst of dubious wars that began soon after we recreated the show in 2001, we very early on examined government misinformation, propaganda, and stonewalling to influence coverage and public opinion. But even in the early years, we realized we were subject to mission creep, you know, in a good way, but which sometimes required some contortions to qualify for a media angle. We even wrote a song about it almost 20 years ago. Over the years, we broadened and broadened and broadened our scope, eventually deeming almost any episode or phenomenon that was processed by the media to be deserving of our scrutiny. And we began talking a lot about narratives, the stories we tell ourselves based largely on what we've heard for our whole lives, often through the media. Then, 2 years ago, a true turning point, Brooks' series on poverty in America, which explored and challenged the assumptions, tropes, prejudices, and gigantic misunderstandings about America's poor. Since then, we've explored evictions, incarceration, transportation, right-wing movements here and abroad, abortion law, money, the internet, all through the prism of how the story is told. They say men think about sex every 7 seconds. At OTM, we think about narrative every 2 seconds.
We've always relied on history to provide context, but to question that history, to focus on the systems that have pushed our history forward, to examine the cracks and the jerry-rigging in what we may have once viewed as the best of all possible machines, that seems increasingly to be our job now.
All of which is to say OTM has evolved, or at least mutated, and I suspect that there will be many more changes to come. Mind you, this does not mean we'll stop holding media organizations and public officials accountable for their outrages. Such scandals have yielded some of our most memorable moments. Please be assured, the weasels are still very much in our sights. But the ferret branch of the weasel family, sorry to say, our best days on that beat are behind us.
There's media all around us, media big and small.
There are media that are hard to kill, like in that movie by Seagal.
There's so much media everywhere, it's hard to find relief.
There's media in the food we eat and in the air we breathe.
I don't know what you're saying, but I know this much is true.
Our name is on the media, and we're the show for you.
On the media,
tune it in and turn it on.
On the media,
we've got the Punditron.
On the media,
we're your media watchdog.
On the media,
at onthemedia.org.
Media,
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 media
deserves a second look.
Media,
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 media.
That's why you've got Bob and Brooke.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Lowinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asa Chaturvedi. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Okay, let's say it together. One, two, three.
Happy New Year! Yeah, that's lame, but let's keep it.
Okay.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.